I miss a green, for example, I'm already upset. When I find my ball in the bunker, I'm really upset. And when I find my ball in a
fried egg.
The dreaded fried egg.
Fried egg lie, I'm about ready to run off the golf course.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another edition of the Fried Egg Podcast. Today, I'm joined by Web.com Tour player Ed Lohr. Ed played college golf at Oklahoma State, where he was an All-American and Walker Cupper, and since turning pro, has spent time on almost every tour in the world. Ed, welcome on.
Thanks, Andy. It's good to be with you this morning. And yes, you gave me an apt description of pretty much played about anywhere you could ever come up with.
Yeah, this year you're full-time on the web. You've gotten off to a great start. You had a T2nd in Panama and a T20th in Colombia. What would you say is the difference playing abroad versus playing on home turf in the United States?
That's a good question. I would say the biggest deal, well, logistics is your biggest problem. Just kind of trying to figure out how to get there, where to stay, how to get to the golf course. They take very good care of us while we're down there, but, just kind of figuring out your bearings. And luckily, both those places I've been to enough to where it's, for me, it's just kind of a normal week. Like, I know where to stay, I know where to eat, I know how to get around. So, maybe I got a little bit of an advantage when we leave the country. And, for a guy that's played in 29 countries, it's not really that big of a deal for me.
So, of all the 29 countries that you've played in, what's been your kind of like favorite one that you'd like to maybe spend time outside of golfing at? And what's been your least favorite place?
I would say my favorite, just from a country place, I think is probably Spain. I've been there a few times for European tour school, and I just love just the history and the architecture and kind of the beauty of it. But I'm there for golf, so I did spend a couple of days in Barcelona a couple of years ago, but I haven't got to spend a whole lot of time outside of playing golf. But I think that's an incredible place. And then my least favorite would be India. I never jived with it. The people were super nice, but I always seemed to get sick there, so I never really jived with India.
It's crazy how 29 countries and how the European tour has turned into a world tour. I know you've tried a number of times. You had a T2nd in a Eurotour start. Is there a big difference between playing in Europe versus playing on like the American tour, like the PGA tour?
I think that just the depth of players, certainly the European tour is a great tour. I would never say it's not. The deal with that tour is how often do you get their top players playing there? I mean, a majority of them play over here now, so you've only got, a handful of events, maybe one or two in the desert, and then, their BMW championship and one or two other where their top flight players are all playing. So, it gives a lot of opportunity for other players to, kind of make an impact. Whereas, week to week on the PGA Tour, it's, a murderer's row of people playing.
We saw, Brooks Koepka make his way to the PGA Tour through the European Tour. His younger brother's doing that now. But then you've got like Sean Crocker is another guy that's played really well the first couple starts this year over there. Seems to be a new path that a lot of young players are going on. If you turn pro in 2000, and if you redid that and started over today, would that be something that you considered doing?
100%. you know, I inadvertently kind of almost tried to do that by playing on the, you know, I played the Asian tour mainly just because I kept failing at Q school, but you know, I had some chances to play in Europe. You know, I would have had my card 1 year if I would have paid my affiliate fee, but that's a whole other story about, you know, paying the $5,000 and but I think it's a great idea for young guys, for anybody really. Heck, I tried it last year. So, you know, there's only so many jobs in golf. So I would encourage anybody to really go do it.
Mm-hmm. So kind of going into people that might not be as familiar with you and your background, how did you get into golf as a kid?
Through my dad. My dad was a really good player, played a couple years at University of Colorado, and then played some Space Coast Tour in Florida in the late 60s, early 70s. So, and then he just stayed connected to golf. He got into the pharmacy business, but he always, you know, played golf and was a plus handicap till his mid-40s. So kind of started out as a family thing. My younger brother is a really good player, played at SMU, and then tried to play for a little bit, but so we just kind of started out as that, and then obviously I kind of had an affinity for it. And then, you know, my parents were well enough off, and my dad had a good plan for us, you know, to try to figure out how to, you know, for us to learn to compete and play a bunch of tournaments, and just kind of took off from there.
Mm-hmm. So did you grew up in Dallas. Where did you grow up playing down there?
I'm actually from the suburbs. Oh. I live in a town called Rockwall, so just east of town. But mm-hmm. I grew up playing in a place called the Shores Country Club, just a nice little, you know, residential club out here east of town. And then, you know, I've got a couple of memberships around town now at different places, Lakewood Country Club. And then actually the Shores now is called the Rockwall Golf and Athletic Club. So still, you know, get to play kind of around town a lot.
So watching the young kids today with like the, how do you think, like, you know, development from, you know, junior golf to college golf to pro golf has changed from, you know, when you were doing it in the late 90s to, you know, how kids are doing it now?
It's obviously, it's so different now. You know, when I first kind of came out, you know, it was kind of your roadmap was, you know, go to Q school, hopefully you make it. But if you don't, you just kind of work your way up, keep trying, work your way up some more. Now it's like the guys are so good, so young, you know, it's like they just come out and they just know they're going to succeed right off the bat. And so it's, I don't know if that's a, you know, kind of a mentality they learned from Tiger. Whereas I was competing against Tiger, man, these kids are so good, so young. Obviously, the everything's gotten better. The instruction's gotten better. The technology's gotten better. The workouts have gotten better. Nutrition. So it's, you know, it's just a way different playing field now.
Mm-hmm. It's, I mean, I see it in amateur stuff. I play with like 14-year-olds who are hitting the ball like 280, and I think back to like. Like, if I got it out there like 220, 240 when I was 14, I was like, wow, I pumped that one.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, all these guys now, you know, all these 25-year-olds that I play with on the web tour, and it's just, you know, I mean, I still hit it, you know, I'm above average. You know, I'm probably a 295 to 300-yard hitter, so I still hit it plenty far, but, I mean, you just hit these kids, and it's just like... I mean, you can obviously tell when the ball comes off the face. Good Lord, is that thing ever going to come down?
Yeah. So in your years with pro golf, like, how is your perception of, you know, getting prepared, or, you know, just in general of golf? How has it changed through your, you know, triumphs and then also the low points?
I mean, I still love it. I obviously still love it, or else I wouldn't be doing it. You would say a ball beater. You know, I love to play more than I love to practice. I always look forward to Thursdays, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. You know, we're more of a drag now. You know, the travel and the practice rounds and all the other stuff. But, you know, once Thursday comes along, I'm still, you know, I'm still as eager as I've ever been. And, you know, hopefully I will continue to be that way.
Yeah, yeah, that'd be a bad sign if you're not like ready to go. You know, that's
that's when you know it's time to do. And that's what you hear a lot of people say when you don't get those butterflies. You know, it's kind of time to do something else. But mm-hmm. you know, I still get them. I still get nervous. You know, I still get anxious. But I think that just means that you really still love it.
So you played on the 1999 Walker Cup team, and, you know, Matt Kuchar, Jonathan Bird, you, and, you know, you guys are the only three that are left playing pro golf. Like, do you keep in touch with the guys that from that team still?
A couple of them. Well, I mean, I see those guys. I saw Jay Bird, you know, a few times, I guess last year when he was playing back down the web. You know, I'll run into Kuchar every now and then and say hello. But let's see, Hunter Haas, I still see around town because he lives here. But other than that, let's see, I used to run into David Gossett, you know, on some mini, doing some mini tour stuff back when he was still trying to play a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a couple Twitter interactions with Steve Scott. I see he's a high fluting head pro now up on the East Coast somewhere. But other than that, not really. That's about it.
Yeah. Of the guys that were on that team, I mean, you guys did have like three mid-ams on that team.
Right.
And, but of the guys, who are you kind of most surprised didn't make it of, like, you know, the Hunter Haas, the Gossett, or Steve?
You know, probably David, just the way his career started, you know, winning the John Deere basically, what, 1 or 2 years into his pro career. And then, you know, kind of that was obviously the peak of it. And then just 10 or 12 years for him, you know, fighting it. But, you know, I think having done it so long, I know how hard it is. So nothing really surprises me either way, guys that do great or guys that don't, because it's such a fine line. And, you know, there's so many variables to a successful career that, you know, who knows how the ball's really going to bounce for anybody.
Yeah, the difference between a T8th and a win can be just the smallest, you know, it could be a bounce off a cart path or a sprinkler.
Yeah, absolutely. Or maybe it's a, you know, it's an 8-foot par putt on Thursday morning that keeps your round going, and all of a sudden you shoot, you know, 3 shots lower than you should have. And obviously that stuff's hard to tell over the course of a week when a guy gets in contention, but, you know, that really is kind of how close, or like you said, it's a, you know, ball hits a cart path and kicks left and goes back in the fairway instead of kicking right and going out of bounds. So it's, you know, that's how close it is.
What would you say is the biggest misconception from, like, you know, just a, say you meet somebody at a bar, to what your job is?
Oh, how fun it is. How cool it is to be a pro golfer. I mean, it's while it's partly correct, because yes, it is cool to play golf for a living. There's obviously so much more to it. There's a lot more downside than, you know, the guys that you see on TV. You know, you're watching the top 15 guys in the world every week try to win $1 million versus the, you know, hundreds or thousands of us that are, you know, trying to figure out how to make money, who are, you know, those guys are only marginally better than the rest of us. But obviously that marginal difference is the difference between making, you know, $15 million a year and then barely being able to keep the lights on.
Yes, it's like a half a shot here and half shot there makes all the difference.
There it is. It's a 10-footer there, you know, up and down here. So it's just way closer than, you know, most people realize.
How has your kind of game changed over the years? Are you a different player now than when you were fresh out of college?
Yes. I mean, I would hope so. You know, I was always really aggressive. probably took a lot more chances than I ever needed to. I think the last couple years, really after 2014 and the last year I had my card, and I really had just a horrible year and kind of took a new path on trying to rebuild my game. And now I try to play a lot more, I don't know if I'd call it conservative, but a lot, you know, a lot more percentage wise, and try to play a lot smarter, because if not that I figured it out, but just kind of over the years that I've always made a lot of birdies, but I've always made a lot of bogeys, and that, you know, the guys that just do well over a long period of time, it's not how many birdies they make, it's just that they kind of figure out how to limit their error. So that's kind of what I've tried to start doing.
Yeah, I talked to an agent once, and they said that they always look for guys that make a lot of birdies, because you can coach away bogeys eventually, but you can't teach birdies.
And when you get on tour, it's such a different game than, you know, even the web tour or certainly the mini tours. That's more of a birdie game. You know, when you're having to shoot sub 20 under, you know, versus the big tour, and, you know, it's most of the weeks it's, you know, 10 to 15 under. That's a way different game than 24 under. So it's, I think that's an adjustment, but it's also, you know, more so because of the courses that you're playing.
Do you think that, like, something I've wondered for a long time is the web is such a different tour in the sense of scoring, like you just pointed out. Do you think that ends up resulting in the best tour players, like web success for like the PGA tour?
Not necessarily. I don't. And I wish, you know, and obviously the web tour knows that, and I think they try to find stronger golf courses, but, you know, the fact is they have a lot of these long-standing relationships with tournaments, and you know, they've been there, like Boise, for instance, as I've always thought it's the best tournament on the schedule, but it's, you know, one of the weakest golf courses, because it's a, you know, it's a driver, a hybrid, and a one of your wedges every hole. So it's, you know, they kind of fight an uphill battle with that. But I don't know how well it translates to all of a sudden you go to hitting 6 and 7 irons. You know, I think your average second shot on tour is in the 175 range, I would guess, on the web tour. You know, it's probably in the 140 range. So, you know, that's a huge difference.
It seems like to me, just watching the scoring and not having seen a lot of the courses, that the courses in like Central America and Latin America are usually a little bit tougher and closer to like PGA Tour scoring.
There's no doubt. I mean, look at this year. You know what? Langley won at 7 under in Panama. You know, the Bahamas weren't that bad, mostly because of the wind. Last week, Taylor shot really low, but other than that, you know, he was the only guy in double digits. You know, a lot of that's obviously with the conditions. You know, it tends to get windy in those countries. You know, the greens were really small and firm, which I think a lot of us would like to see every week. But yeah, when you get here, I call it a lot of country club golf. You play a lot of nice country club courses, but obviously you put really good players on country club courses, and what are they, you know, they're going to shoot 25 under. So yeah, you're right.
So if you were going to set up a golf course to test modern day professional, how would you set it up in terms of to get the best competition?
Oh man, that's a tough one. Cause you know, really using today's equipment, it's going to be so hard, but you know, I know you guys are way big into golf course architecture, but you know, the things that give guys trouble, in my opinion, are when you make them have to curve the ball off the tee. You know, obviously firm greens, you know, they do a great job of hiding pins already. I remember a couple of the US Opens I played you know, the hardest holes weren't necessarily the longest ones. It was ones that maybe you had to curve a ball 10 or 20 yards. So that seems to be the biggest thing. you know, you look at Riviera last week. I mean, I know they've stretched it out, but you've got a lot of dog legs where guys kind of have to move the ball, and you know, it's hard with the balls and the clubs, you know, really to get a ball to curve. So, in my opinion, that's the hardest. That's how you're going to create the hardest conditions.
That's something I've wanted to do, like a post about. Is like, if you look back at like Tiger's most famous shots, and like just the most famous shot, like the most memorable shots in golf, for like, you know, in the early 2000s and 90s, were all like recovery shots where, you know, he curved a ball like, you know, out of the rough and, you know, and turned it 30 yards. And today, like, the most famous shots are just like Dustin Johnson hitting like a driver that doesn't move an inch right down the middle of the fairway.
Well, it's funny you say that, because like, when I tell people the biggest difference I've seen in golf is that, you know, when I used to watch golf when I was a kid, and you know, you'd turn on the Buick Classic at Warwick Hills and some guy's nursing a one-shot lead, and you know, he takes his persimmon three wood and hits his, you know, hits a squeeze fade off the last hole to try to get it in play. And now it's like you see a guy with a one-shot lead, and what does he do? He tees his driver as high as he can and tries to hit it 350. And so, you know, that's kind of the biggest thing that I've seen, is that there's no fear, but, and there's a lot less creativity. And I think that's just because of a lot of the, you know, the equipment and the training. But, you know, I do agree. And I mean, if I counted off the top 10 best shots I've probably ever hit in my life, you know, 7 or 8 of them are probably crazy shots that I've hit out of the woods, you know, because mm-hmm. those are the ones you remember. I mean, you remember the 50 yard slice you hit with a 3-wood onto the green. And, you know, that's obviously way more memorable than just, oh, I hit one 310 down the middle, you know?
Yeah. And then with today, like if you put the ball on the rough with today's equipment, it's like so hard to move a ball.
Yeah, no doubt. It's hard. Yeah, it's hard to move a ball, you know, yeah, obviously from the fairway, and much less put some grass interference in there. Then you're really going to have a hard time getting it to go anywhere.
I've kind of have a theory that like the golf swing has changed a little bit because of technology. Would you agree with that?
No doubt. It has. It's way less. Well, I think it's way less dependent on your hand action, which is probably good. But obviously that takes probably some of the creativity out. And now guys are just, you know, smashing it every time.
Yeah, this I kind of think like I've like half written an article about this, but like the, you know, there's so much success with the young 20-year-olds now because they grew up with this golf swing and technology. So
I agree, and I don't, you know, they weren't taught, you know, when they grew up, they practiced with the TrackMan. They practiced, you know, basically hitting it as hard as they can. And the technology and everything they grew up with, it doesn't really allow it to curve. So I agree 100%.
So with getting back to kind of your experience all over the world, you know, you hear a lot of tales of caddies in Central and Latin America and South America. And, you know, what's been the worst caddy that you've had across the world?
I had a guy in Brazil a couple of years ago I actually ended up getting rid of him after the practice round. But on like the 15th hole in the practice round, he cracked open a beer. So, you know, that kind of told me that he probably wasn't going to be real serious about what he was doing. So I had to go find another one. But I think that's the only time I've really had to fire a guy before the round. But, you know, you never know. I've had some, you know, a lot of the best caddies I had were these ladies when I was playing the Asian tour, just with the pool cart. And, you know, they didn't speak a lick of English, but they did exactly what they were supposed to do.
So, speaking of, you know, you made it really big when you were using the push cart on the Adams tour, you know, and a mutual friend, Todd Mitchell, is so anti-push cart. Do you think that the push cart helps you on the golf course?
Well, I will have to admit, Andy, that I was like Mr. Anti-Pushcart as well. Until, actually, I was playing an Adams event in St. Louis a couple years ago, and I thought I was going to die. It was so hot, so I went to a Dick's Sporting Good and bought a floor model push cart. And now, I don't know, I'm like, now I just think I'm so dumb for, you know, going so long without using one. But, you know, it just kind of, I'm one of those guys, I played so much golf, really just relying on myself. I mean, I just think your self-reliance, you know, is a lot more when you have a push cart. Plus, you got nobody to blame but yourself. So, but I love them now.
Yeah,
I have to admit,
I'm on Team Pushcart too. I used to be a big carrier, and I always would carry. But like now, I think it's so dumb. It's like you play this sport where you depend on your like shoulders a lot in the golf swing. Like, why
it's
would
so
you?
So dumb.
Yeah.
What? So, and on all these college tournaments where we used to carry 36 a day, and man, I mean, obviously we were 20 then, but. Still, I can't believe how much fresher I feel now after just using the old pusher.
Yeah, Todd was complaining that you have to walk around a green the one time he used it, and I was
I mean, let's be honest, Mitchell doesn't play any tournaments where he doesn't have a caddy anyway, so what does he really know?
that's what I'm saying. Everybody's like, you should take a caddy. It's like, I'm not paying for a caddy. I'm an internet blogger.
Exactly.
So it's the push cart is I think it might have been UNLV's coach says that they statistically proved that it saved like a shot or a half a shot around.
I think actually it was Conrad Ray at Stanford.
Yeah, anybody that is trying to play tournament golf and throwing a bag on their shoulders all the time, like, there's no way you can't say that it helps you to have fresher body when you're playing.
I agree. You just got to feel way better by the end of the day. There's no doubt.
So you've got triplets. I imagine that adds a little bit of challenge to the playing all over the world. When you had kids, when you found out it was triplets, was there a moment where you said, oh shit?
Well, honestly, Andy, there's not a day that goes by that I don't say, oh shit. but you know, it's funny, I really played probably some of my best golf right after they were born, and you know, I think that's just kind of, you know, they kind of added a real perspective to life of, you know, how stupid golf is compared to, you know, being a dad to three little kids. So, you know, they obviously offer that to me, but, you know, there's definitely pressure. I mean, you know, I don't know if anybody told me how expensive kids were before I had them. Like, good Lord, man, you just can't make enough money, it seems like. But, you know, they're the apple of my eye. You know, they're kind of the reason I play, and I just, you know, I love them to death, really.
I think perspective with golf is so important. I thought about trying to play for a little bit, and then you start, like, I started working, and then all of a sudden I'd go out and play, like, say, a year after, and, like, I played so much better because I realized how insignificant little things in golf are.
Yeah, I mean, the first year that I got my tour card was the end of 2011, and it was my 12th try through Q school, and you know, my kids were born in September, and, you know, it obviously had something to do with it. I mean, I got to bring my daughter home. You know, they were kind of in the NICU and then the special care nursery at the hospital. I mean, I brought my daughter home after the third round of second stage of Q school. So, you know, if you think that doesn't make me more relaxed, I'm like, well, this is way more awesome than, you know, trying to shoot 68 at Craig Ranch tomorrow. I mean, this is obviously way more important. So, you know, there's no doubt in my mind that had something to do with me, you know, finally getting through on my 12th try.
Getting three right off the bat's got to be just like being thrown into like being an NFL quarterback and seeing like an eight-man blitz.
Well, you just, you know, I think at this point we're actually lucky that, you know, we didn't have one beforehand and we knew how hard one was. We just kind of did it with three. You know, all these people are like, I don't know how you did three. I'm like, well, that's all we knew. And, you know, but now it's, now I actually prefer it because at least my kids are all doing the same thing. Now I think about, you know, I mean, my parents had four kids and they were all kind of spaced 2 or 3 years apart, or, you know, all these friends I know that have them spaced apart. I'm like, man, you know, at least I get to sleep. I don't have a, you know, an 8, 6 and a, you know, a 1-year-old that still doesn't sleep. So I wouldn't obviously trade it for the world or anything.
Yeah, I guess that is true. You have all the same problems at every year.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
So you've seen the Q school process change. Did you prefer the, you know, ability to get straight to the tour, or do you think this current system is better?
No, I would have preferred the old one, and I think every player pretty much would have. It just kind of gives you an opportunity to, you know, I think there needs to be an opportunity to still get to the big show. Rather, you know, you're some hotshot kid that thinks he can go right to the tour, or some guy that maybe just barely missed his card to give him a chance to get it back. You know, I understand why they did it, you know, for the sponsorship of the web.com tour. So, you know, obviously it comes down to money a lot of times, which a lot of the world does. So I get why they did it, but I don't necessarily think it's a better deal.
It's I feel like it, I like that the web means more now, but I did like the idea of like everybody's got a shot to make it.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about drama. I mean, it was some of the best drama in the world, and you know, I unfortunately was the, like, the last guy that really had a Q school meltdown at the end of 2012 to get back to the tour. You know, the year before I was one of the guys that got my card, so I've experienced obviously both sides of it. But I mean, I've never really felt pressure like I have at Q school. I mean, when you're obviously, you know, quote unquote, playing for your job, it's, you know, it's a little different animal.
What was your Q school, you know, drama, and then also the triumph? You give the listeners both sides of the coin.
Okay, well, obviously in 11 I had some triumph because I got, you know, I think I finished whatever T20th or something to get my card, and then, you know, the next year I had my tour card. Now, I ended up playing probably almost as much on the web tour, and I had won on the web tour in Panama of the year. So I had job security, but I went back to finals and I was playing really good. I think I started the last round in third or fourth place, and I shot 77, including, you know, hitting it in the water on Alcatraz and blah blah blah, and ended up, I think I shot 77 or 78 maybe, and didn't get my card. So I was like the last guy that, you know, truly kind of melted down to miss his card. But actually it was fine because the next year, you know, in 13, I had my best year, you know, really in pro golf, finished, I think, fourth on the web tour, pretty much had my card locked up by March. So I'm sure that had something to do with it. I had some, you know, some inner motivation to kind of, you know, prove myself right. But I definitely have lived all parts of golf. There's no doubt.
From like a personal side, like the year before I qualified for the Mid-Am 2 years ago. I didn't play this year because of my wedding, but the year before I was 2 under on the 17th hole. Okay. And I finished double, and I played in Indianapolis, and I had to drive. I drove home from there, and it was like the worst drive of my life. You know, both holes I hit in the fairway. But then the next year, it's so funny how golf works. Like the next year, I'm playing, and I'm just like, I wasn't really playing well. I was even par, but I was just like kind of scraping around, you know, one of those rounds. And I hit a wedge close on like the 13th hole, and then all of a sudden everything clicked, and I birdied that hole, but then I birdied three of my last four, and like you just make it in, and it's like, you know, it's not that hard, you know, but you always make it hard on yourself.
It's just such a dumb game, and you know, I mean, you just hear those stories all the time about the guy that was in such good position and fell apart, and then the guy that was, you know, four off the cut line and birdied four of his last five, and then shot 66, 66, and finished eighth. I mean, it's just such a dumb game, and I don't know why we all try to figure it out.
You've got you're one of the rare pros that has a full-time tracker. I mean, behind the Big Cat, I mean, Ed Lore Tracker has got to be number two most followed tracker out there.
There's no doubt, and the Ed Lore Tracker is definitely way more entertaining. He's the most entertaining tracker on tour. You know, anything that's based more on your eating habits than your golf has got to be way more entertainment for the Twitter world. Yeah. No doubt.
How did the tracker come about?
It's, you know, I'll be honest with you. I've met the guy twice just for a few minutes. I've had obviously a ton of interactions with him on text and social media. It's a left-handed guy. I will not divulge his identity, but and a few years ago when I was on tour, he said, "Do you mind if I do this?" And I said, "No, man, knock it out." And I really don't provide much information. He somehow finds it out or comes up with it on his own. So it's definitely, I mean, I love the loonies, and it's, you know, it definitely provides some good laughter and humor on the golf course for sure.
So you know, the tracker gives us an inside look that you're a big foodie. Where's the best food outside the U.S. that you've been to?
Outside?
Yeah.
Outside, you know, it's hard to go wrong with a Brazilian steakhouse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you just need to gorge yourself to death. I found a couple of spots in Colombia that I just love.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd put that pretty high up on the list. You know, as far as in the States, Lafayette, Louisiana is number one. And, it, you know, it's a long way to number two after that.
That's coming up on the schedule here.
Yeah, it's my favorite event of the year, mainly because, I've won there. But I've stayed with a family for 6 or 7 years that are from there. And, you know, they obviously know all the spots to take me. So it's just it's my favorite week of the year.
So with the web on, like, you got a month layoff, what do you guys do? What do you do? Like, what's a downtime look like versus, you know, the week in, week out grind?
Yeah, well, you know, I was gone so long. I was gone 34 days. So, you know, most of mine, I've been home about 10 days, is really just being a, you know, trying to be a father and a husband and try to get back into that routine. It's a little, you know, it's kind of a shock to the system when you come back, you know, because you've just been in such a selfish mode just trying to be a golfer that, you know, you kind of come back and it's, all right, we got to get the kids up, get them to school, and, you know, then kind of get back into the routine of being a husband. So it's, you know, that's kind of what it is for me. Obviously, a lot of guys are different, but, and really, we've had some pretty crappy weather, so I haven't even, I've hit balls one time in 10 days, which I really was going to take, plan to take all last week off anyway, but this week I would have liked to have gotten some work done, but we're, you know, we've had like 9 inches of rain in the last 3 days, so I've touched the club once since I've been home.
Yeah, I mean, balance is good. That's got to be something that's changed is how, you know, imagine when you turn pro, you spend like your life gets like kind of encompassed by golf, right?
There's no doubt. Yeah, I mean, obviously that's all you're trying to do. And I mean, that's all I'm still really trying to do. But now instead of going to the golf course, you know, at 9 and dicking around until 5, now it's like, okay, I've got a window. My kids are at school from, you know, 8 to 3. all right, I got to drop them off. I got to get my workout in. You know, then I got 4 hours, and this is what I got to get done. So why it's different, I think it's actually better because now you can't just, you know, dick around, play 18, have lunch, not really have any structure. Now you've got, all right, I got an hour and a half of hitting balls. You know, I got an hour of short game practice, and I'm going to go get a quick 9 in before I got to go get the kids. So it's different, but I almost think it's better, especially for me, because I could, you know, I got some ADD, and so I could just get out there all day and just be like, what the hell did I just do all day? So I think it's better, actually.
Maybe the next big fad in professional golf will be have triplets right before you turn pro.
No, don't. It just complicates things. But you know, I think that, you know, for a lot of the young guys, and obviously, like I said, I was the same way. You know, and I heard a podcast with Paul Casey a few months ago, and he was talking about it because he just had a kid. And he's like, really? I mean, you know, I know all these guys like to spend all, you know, you can get what you need to get done in 4 or 5 hours. I mean, it's not like you, you know, I think that some of the way golf's changed is guys are a lot more technically correct on a day-to-day basis. So, you know, like I don't worry about taking a week off. I actually embrace it because I know you need it, you know, whereas a long time ago before TrackMan and you know, all the great instruction, it was, well, you know, I gotta keep going so I keep my feels. Well, now it's like, well, all right, I'm gonna get on TrackMan. All right, my swing looks the same. Well, you know, maybe it allows guys a little less, you know, to feel like they have to be out there all day, every day.
It's a good point. Like, I feel like I do better the less I hit balls now. And it's like what David Duvall said. Is like,
there's definitely less expectation. I mean, there's no doubt. And, you know, you need, you know, most players that aren't, you know, top 10 or 15 are playing, you know, 25, 28 weeks a year. I mean, you need some time off. I mean, that's obviously a lot of time, you know, on the road and grinding. And, you know, it's okay to give yourself a break. And I think that's one thing that's helped me, you know, really stay kind of injury free is I've never felt like that I wasn't able to take a few days off if I felt like I needed it.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things, like a young pro, you get down to Florida or wherever you're going and you feel like, oh, this is my job. So you got to do like 10-hour days every day or else somebody's going to pass you by.
Yeah, and then by the time you get to the tournament, you're so damn tired. All you want to do is, you know, recover. But so there's definitely a balance. And, you know, maybe it takes some guys, you know, maybe it takes them having kids to kind of figure out that, hey, it's not, I don't have to be out there all the time.
You want to do some overrated, underrated?
Sure. Yeah.
It's the fried egg staple. So.
Okay, I love it.
All right, so you just pick one or the other here. TrackMan.
All right. Am I allowed to say anything?
Yeah, you can say you can.
I think
can
it's underrated. Yeah, I think it's underrated. I started using one. I don't have one, like, but I think I'm the only guy that doesn't have one anymore. But, you know, my instructors have one, and I love it. I don't get lost in the numbers, but I think it's revolutionized the way guys teach.
Why is it that everybody carries around TrackMan like it's like it's in its own case? It's like it's a bomb, you know?
It's like it's like a lady with a Gucci purse. It's like a status symbol, but. Hell, I see guys on the mini tours, you know, I'm like, there's no money to pay $20,000 for a TrackMan.
Well, I don't understand why you can't just carry it within, like, a bigger bag. Everybody's got to carry it around.
Well, it's like the designer purse, Andy. You got to show it off, you know?
It just looks so silly because it's so small. And it's like, yeah. You're carrying this big tour bag. Like, you can't put that just into the bag?
I guess, yeah, or just put in a nondescript backpack or something.
Exactly. So, yeah. So you're a obviously, we aren't going to ask you about Whataburger. That's like your spot, huh?
Yeah, yeah. That's my spot.
Have you ever had contract negotiations with Whataburger?
No, I've been trying, honestly, but I don't think they sponsor like individuals, but I'm a huge Whataburger fan. I'm really a fan of their breakfast. I mean, I love their burgers, but I don't eat a lot of, I prefer to make my own burgers, but I love their breakfast because, you know, let's face it, when you got a 7 o'clock tea time, I'm not going to get up and make my own breakfast. I'm just going to hit the Whataburger for a Bob, you know, I mean, come on.
So that's what you got to get, Bob. I'm going to go down. I spent some time in Texas, but I only got Whataburger a couple times, but I'm going
to
be...
Yeah, I get the breakfast on a bun. I mean, it's hard to beat. Number 21. Next time you're down, try it.
Overrated, underrated, In-N-Out?
In-N-Out? I love it. I think it's great. People are fanatics about it, and then people think it's way overrated, but I think I would say it's properly rated. I think it's very good.
All right. We'll let you slide with the properly rated.
Yeah, sorry.
It's okay. Steak and Shake.
Overrated.
Yeah, I'm in on that too. And then, what's like your under the radar purchase outside of the breakfast at Whataburger?
I get the number 5, the bacon cheeseburger.
All right. Then we'll say last one. We're going to say Springfield, Illinois.
The land of Lincoln. Well, I would definitely say Bloomington, Illinois is overrated. I don't know about Springfield. It was, I don't know what is the rating on Springfield, so I can overrate it or underrate it.
Well, if you think Bloomington's overrated, Springfield's definitely overrated.
Okay, I was just throwing some shade at Mitchell there, you know.
I know we got our state am in Bloomington this year, and I don't think I'm going to make the trip down there. It's just
I don't blame you. It's just a bunch of cornfields, man.
Yeah.
When I was driving there from, I guess he did the qualifier last year in St. Louis. So I was driving from St. Louis up there like, man, this is just one cornfield after another up here.
Yeah, I went to school in Champaign for college, and yeah, it's all cornfields.
Cornfields and soybeans, huh?
Yeah, it's a tough spot in the summer. It gets pretty hot down there.
Woo-hoo-hoo, man, all that humidity coming off those crops.
What is the hottest place that you've played? Like
Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. No doubt, 100%.
It's always hot there.
Oh, I don't. Yeah, I just don't. Obviously, the people that I don't know if anybody loves it, but there's people that live there. There's a lot of people that live there. But man, you can have it.
All right. Well. We'll let you go and get to your workout. Everybody can follow Ed on Twitter. It's at Lore, and then
no, at Big E and Big D.
Oh shit! See, at Big E and Big D. You know, I'm just gonna cut that out because I got the power to do that. And then of course follow the Ed Lore Tracker at Ed Lore Tracker. That's
it'll be hot here in a couple of weeks. Lafayette. A lot of food updates.
Does the tracker ever come on site?
He's been on site a couple of times, but he has an uncanny way of finding people that are there to kind of help him out.
All right, well, good luck, and we'll be rooting for you.
All right, Andy, I appreciate it, man. It's fun to be on with you.